overall lesson of the Wright brothers has to be that a prophet is not without honor, except in his own country. This is the Revelation series, and you're getting Revelation, whether it's in the book of Revelation or not. I'm going to be embarking upon our exclusive journey into Babylon on Monday, but for now I'm finishing up with the brothers Wright. Yes, a prophet is not without honor, except in his own country. And this was so true of Orville and Wilbur Wright, who could not talk their own government into being interested in purchasing their airplanes. Their own government didn't even realize that they had flown airplanes because it seemed too fantastic to them. They were too close to it. And especially the citizens of Dayton, as Wilbur and Orville are flying around Huffman Prairie. Can anything good come out of Dayton? So, bang, they're writing Europe. They're writing the heads of state in England and France, and they are responding positively, the Wright brothers, that is. Now, obviously, our Lord Jesus Christ was the perfect example. His own people rejected him. And, first of all, his own hometown rejected him. He went to the synagogue in Nazareth, and they about threw him over a cliff because they couldn't believe. Is this not Joseph's son? You see, the problem with being in your own country is the people know you, and they trip. Like the Wright brothers' nephew said, I couldn't see the greatness of the Wright brothers, of my uncles, because of their proximity, because of the commonness, the commonplace events that surrounded the invention of the airplane. It's just hard to believe that it could happen in a bicycle shop. And it's hard to believe to many people that anything good can come out of a laundry room or a crappy little city somewhere in the Midwest or the Middle East or wherever. But this is a principle, and this should actually encourage you, because it's a principle that will stay true throughout the Aeonian times. God doesn't depart from it. He enjoys confounding the wisdom of the wise by doing this. Now, it occurred to me that I gave you an imitation of a coffee pot. I told you I liked my decaf because it doesn't make me crazy. Juliana got me this when she went to Copenhagen, Denmark. I think my imitation was off. It's supposed to go like this. I think I screwed that up. I think I did something like, and what's more like, so I wanted to clear that up. Let's see. I was going to tell you the story of, I said that governments are terrible at recognizing talents. Local, people who know you. This fits with the prophet is not without honor except in his own country template. I read an article back in 1989, I think. There was a guy about to retire at the Postal Service. I worked for the U.S. Postal Service, as many of you know. And I wrote an article. I was a writer back then as well. And I wrote a clever article, I thought. And this article compared the retirement of Harold Snyder to the demise of the U.S. Postal Service, as I saw it. So I drew a clever analogy, and I wrote a picturesque article. I thought it was good. So I worked in a little town called Willard, Ohio. So the first thing I tried to do was give the article to the Willard Times, Willard, Ohio, dinky little railroad town. And I wanted to give it to them. And they said, we're not really interested. I said, okay. They said, we already did a retirement story on Harold Snyder. Well, I said, this is more than a retirement story. Sorry, don't want it. Okay, so then I went to the Mansfield News Journal. Mansfield was a bigger city in Ohio, and they boasted the largest newspaper between Cleveland and Cincinnati. And I actually had a column in the Mansfield News Journal. It was published a couple times a week. I wrote freelance articles for them for their Sunday magazine. And they basically usually gave me $25 per article. So I thought I would sell it to the Mansfield News Journal, this article on Harold Snyder, who was retiring from the post office, my fellow worker. Great guy. I loved the guy, Harold Snyder. Well, I called the Mansfield News Journal. They said, why would we... I sent them the article, and they said, why would we want an article about a guy retiring in Willard? Why would we run that in the Mansfield News Journal? Because we're 30 miles from Willard. Okay. Rejected by the Willard Times, rejected by the Mansfield News Journal. So what did I do next? I sent the article to the Chicago Tribune. That's right, the Chicago Tribune. And they paid me $150 for it. I love to tell his story because they recognized talent. They recognized the worthiness of the article. And in fact, the day that article ran, I got a phone call at the post office while I was working. I got a phone call from a writing professor at Loyola University in Chicago who said, that was one of the best articles I've ever read in the Chicago Tribune. So that made my day, obviously. But this goes to show you that a prophet is not without honor except in his own country. It takes people sometimes it takes people removed from the scene at another level to recognize something good when they see it. So let that be a lesson to you. Now we're going to finish up with the Wright brothers here. And on Monday, this is Friday. Yes, on Monday, it's off to Babylon. I'm really thinking about using a different filter with Babylon. I'm thinking about going to a grainy black and white because Babylon is a harrowing tale. But not before I do this, ladies and gentlemen. I love this quote from Wilbur. He said this concerning the labor. Let's read this in context. There was more, always more to learn and think about. The new Flyer 3, this was the third version of the airplane that had flown at Kitty Hawk, was more sturdily built than its predecessors, its motor more powerful, producing as much as 25 horsepower. The double rudder had been enlarged, the wing area slightly reduced, and the leading edges of the wings made more effective. But the improvements this time, as the brothers would stress, resulted mainly from more scientific design and changes in methods of balancing and steering. The most important change was to move the forward rudder even farther forward for better longitudinal or nose-to-tail control. They had discovered that most of their troubles could be remedied by tilting the machine forward a little so its flying speed could be restored. Here's the quote. Here's the money quote right here. The best dividends on the labor invested, they said, have invariably come from seeking more knowledge rather than more power. It was more knowledge. And we are coming to a realization of the truth. And I have a note here that says Paul's gospel, more knowledge. But for us, knowledge is power. And I think the Wright brothers would tell you the same thing. The knowledge was power. We did have power. We had 25 horsepower, which is a joke. It's nothing compared to planes today. But anyway, I mean, your lawnmower, you know, talking 25 horsepower. But it's information, it's knowledge, coming to a realization of the truth. Now, I think this is a great quote here. It was at Huffman Prairie that summer and fall of 1905 that the brothers, by experiment and change, truly learned to fly. Then, also, at last, with a plane they could rely on, they could permit themselves enjoyment in what they had achieved. Now, think of our Lord. Did he have enjoyment in what he achieved? I mean, his worst hours were on the cross. There was no enjoyment there. And yet, it was at that time that he was achieving the salvation of the world and the reconciliation of the universe. And yet, it was not until he raised from the dead that he could truly enjoy what he had achieved. And I always, as a kid, I loved this Jesus resurrecting from the dead. All the hard stuff was over. And since then, all the hard stuff has been over. And now he's just been luxuriating in his accomplishment, basking in it. I don't doubt it, of course. And now he's waiting to see the fruit of it. And the next thrilling thing for him is being joined to the rest of his body. We're the rest of his body. Do you understand that? He's the head of what is called Christ. He's Jesus Christ. Christ is not his last name, it's a title. We shall take that same title, and we shall be enchristed, and we shall join him, because he is incomplete. This is a shock. I hope you're sitting down. Jesus Christ is incomplete without his body. He's the head. We're the body. Together we make the completed Christ. This is why he is waiting for us in order to begin the task of reconciling the universe to God. You will find that information in The First Idiot in Heaven. This book gains in complexity as it goes. It starts very simple to introduce you to this truth of two different gospels. And then it goes into detail, technical detail, of why we're different than Israel and why our task in the next life is different than Israel's task. We are going to reconcile the universe. Israel stays on earth. More from the Wright brothers finally enjoying the fruit of their labor, because they said this later. I'm gonna go back to this passage. Here's another quote. This one guy said the principles of flight ended up being so simple. This one guy wrote that one wondered why in the world human beings had not built an airplane long before. Well, yeah, once you do it the first time, then everybody goes, oh, duh. Yeah, that looks easy enough. Well, why didn't anybody do it for 6,000 years? So Orville had once said of how Wilbur and his brother had endured, quote, a period of ridicule and abuse such as had seldom been known in the history of scientific investigation. France, he said, was now at last showing its appreciation of their merit. And France was the first to show appreciation of the merit of what the Wright brothers had accomplished. But finally, at Huffman Prairie, when they had perfected the machine, they had the Wright Flyer 3, and they deemed it to be relatively safe. Now, finally, they can enjoy themselves, take pleasure in the very experience of traveling through the air in a motor-powered machine as no one had. And each brother would try as best he could to put the experience in words. This would be, who's speaking here? Wilbur. When you, quote, when you know after the first few minutes that the whole mechanism is working perfectly, Wilbur was to say, the sensation is so keenly delightful as to be almost beyond description. Nobody who has not experienced it for himself can realize it. It is a realization of a dream so many persons have had of floating in the air. More than anything else, the sensation is one of perfect peace, mingled with the excitement that strains every nerve to the utmost, if you can conceive of such a combination. There it is. The joy, the perfect peace of realizing a dream. Here's how Orville put it. At a height of 100 feet, you feel hardly any motion at all, except for the wind which strikes your face. If you did not take the precaution to fasten your hat before starting, you have probably lost it by this time. The operator moves a lever, the right wing rises, and the machine swings about to the left. You make a very short turn, yet you do not feel the sensation of being thrown from your seat, so often experienced in automobile and railway travel. You find yourself facing toward the point from which you started. The objects on the ground now seem to be moving at much higher speed, though you perceive no change in the pressure of the wind on your face. You know then that you are traveling with the wind. When you're near the starting point, the operator stops the motor while still high in the air. The machine coasts down at an oblique angle to the ground, and after sliding 50 or 100 feet comes to rest. Although the machine often lands when traveling at a speed of a mile a minute, you feel no shock whatever, and cannot in fact tell the exact moment at which it first touched the ground. The motor close behind you kept up an almost deafening roar during the whole flight, yet in your excitement you did not notice it till it stopped. The joy of flight, the dream of flight, the peace of being above, on an invisible rail, not seen, not heard, not felt by humanity, and yet we are going to be rising in the air, as Paul so eloquently states it in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. We shall rise in the air to meet the dead. Finally, free from the confines of gravity, and most importantly, free from the confines of our mortality. No more sin, no more failure, no more death. How can we not rise in the air on the wings of such epic deliverance?